Coming to you from the campus of East Texas A&M University in Commerce, Texas, this is 88.9 KETR. I'm notably Texan host Matt Minky. And today on the show, I'm excited to learn a lot more about a Texas singer and songwriter who lived in the Lone Star State throughout the bulk of his life, though recently decided to make the move way up north. And this is a man with a long history in music. He was with various bands in the 1980s, and then around 1990 started fronting his own group. And his latest release, Lace, marks album number 6 for today's special guest on Notably Texan, Billy Eli. Well, it's a pleasure to get to know you, Billy. I appreciate you devoting some time to Notably Texan today. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much, and I appreciate the invitation.
Now, I know that you have moved up north these days, but take me back, if you will, to your East Texas roots. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Polk County. It's like south of y'all, a couple hundred miles. It's southeast Texas, just north, about 70 miles due north of Houston. County seat's Livingston. I was born in the hospital there and graduated from that high school.
So, I mean, you stuck around that area all throughout your younger years then, I assume?
Yeah, my father pipelined, and so when I was real young, we traveled a lot. And then we started school. My parents, both of their families was from there, and they, after we started, me and my sister, she's 3 years younger, they said, yeah, we're not going to try and travel and have kids in school. So, you know, they built my house there in Polk County, and the old man traveled when he had work, and I stayed right there until after I graduated.
You eventually ended up in Austin for a time?
I did, and yeah, for a time, yeah, 35 years.
Okay, that is a time.
I had originally meant to go to Los Angeles, and I got past Austin, but I didn't get far enough past Austin.
Yeah.
And I ran out of money, and it just seemed smarter to double back. I don't know if you've spent much time in Southern California around Los Angeles. Man, it's great, and there's some great music there, some great country rock musicians. But it is a bad place to not know anybody and to be out of money.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally makes sense. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, would certainly say that being in Austin was not a bad decision by any stretch. So, no shame there.
it wasn't. And I tell you, Austin was a great place to kind of learn the trade and, you know, get my songs together. And there were other great young players, and there were older guys, and there were great venues to play. And good audiences, I don't have any complaints at all about the time I spent there. And about 7 years ago, we moved to New England, but that really was just I was tired of perpetual summer, man. you know, I love Texas, but man, it's hot.
You were right about that.
And I really miss the Tex-Mex food. And I was missing Lone Star beer, and then I made a deal with a liquor store up here, and they stock Lone Star.
Okay.
Beer.
All right. Well, you can't replace the Tex-Mex, but at least you can import the beer.
I can have a Lone Star beer if I want one.
Nice, yeah. Nice. Well, Billy Eli, what sorts of jobs did you have as a younger man before your time as a recording artist?
Well, I pipelined because I followed my father into that.
Okay.
And I did that for, I don't know, I was probably around 30, and I never did it full time. I would work off and on. I was already working at being a musician, and what I liked about that kind of work, first of all, it paid a whole lot, and it was seasonal. I could work 3 months in the summer, and then I could live off what I had stashed, you know, for 7 or 8 months without having to, you know, without having to get any other kind of job.
Wow.
And I did that for a while, and then had kids and got married a couple of times, and took up building trades, and I built cabinets, but mostly for the bulk of my adult life, I hadn't done anything but be a musician.
Well, that's kind of the dream, I think, for a lot of people. So
I don't want to say a nightmare, but the dream people have, that they weren't dreaming about the places I was playing.
Right. No, I definitely understand where you're going with that. Right, a lot of people have a very glitzy idea of what it's like to be a full-time musician, but the reality is quite different. So,
yeah, those are people that hadn't played enough, you know, ice houses made out of cinder blocks.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Well, welcome to Texas.
Now, I believe that you put out your first album in, I think it was 1994, but tell me about some of the bands that you were involved in before that, because I know you were doing some other things before you were Billy Eli, the solo act.
I was in a band, the only one of note, two of note, really. One was called the Honky Tonk Cats, and we put that together in, I don't know, 85 or 86, and the notable thing about that band was it was my first really good working band that, you know, we were able to get gigs and keep them and stuff like that. And I just started writing a few songs. They weren't very good yet, but it was a place to start. And the notable thing about that, the pedal steel player was Ricky Davis, who went on to play with Gary P. Nunn and Dale Watson and just a whole bunch of other people.
Nice.
And and his brother Charles, who went on to play with Pat Green. You know, we were 22, 23 years old, and there was like five or six of us living in a two-bedroom apartment. we never had any money, but we didn't think about money all that much. We played a lot of gigs and got to record a little bit here and there, and that was a really good first band experience there in Austin. A few years later, I was in a band called Lost in America I had started writing a few more songs. We fell into that thing where we were too rock for country and too country for rock.
Okay.
But that was the first band that I was in that did a whole lot of road work, and we toured a lot. We didn't last very long, maybe a year. And, you know, and everybody, the band broke up and everybody went on to other things. But those were the two. And it doesn't happen very often. Every once in a while, I'll be at a gig somewhere. Somebody would come up and say, "Hey, I saw you play with Lost in America." And I'm like, "Man, how do you even remember that? That was like in 1988.
Yeah.
You know? But I learned a lot. And I learned a lot of not just about the songs and writing songs and playing music. I learned a lot about getting along with people in the group, which is, you know, that's a skill on its own, and how to, you know, travel. And because, like I said, it wasn't like we were playing, you know, A-list rooms mostly. We played a lot of VFW halls and played a bowling alley once. And, you know, it was, you remember a few years ago that movie, Crazy Heart?
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Bridges playing that old washed-up songwriter.
Absolutely. And
somebody asked me, they were like, "Hey, you're going to go see it?" I was like, "I don't need to see it. I live it."
Right.
I know exactly what it is. But, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is all part of the foundation and you know, stuff that you can look back upon fondly, even if it wasn't perfect at the time. You got to start somewhere. And we've got notable Texan Billy Eli on the line today, checking in from his adopted home of New England. And you're listening to 88.9 KETR. Now, your latest album, Lace, came out after about a decade, I think, without any new releases. So I was curious what kind of took you away from the music for so long, and how did you get back in the saddle?
Actually, nothing really took me away from it. If you go and check my back catalog, I do one serious release about every 10 years. I did one in 94. I did one in 2000. I did one in 2010. And then I did this one that came out, or maybe it was 2011. I did the one that came out this year. It's just, I don't write a whole lot of songs. I have a pretty good catalog now, but I've been doing it now 40 years. But, I write when something inspires me to write about it. Very rarely do I just pull out a guitar and say, "Okay, I need to write a song, so I'm going to start with, you know, this chord, and then I'm going to write about while I was going down the street. I don't do that too much. Most of my songs are pretty internalized, and it'll be something that sort of strikes me.
Now, Billy, you've assembled some talented players with you on Lace, and I think you've worked with several of these musicians previously, right?
I had worked with all of them before in sort of one-off situations. Now, three of them are in my regular band. Drummer Dale Daniel, he lives in L.A., and I met him, I don't know, a dozen years or so ago when I was out there and needed a pickup band. And him and Ed Tree, who produced and played some of the lead guitar parts on the record, and Taras Prodna, who plays bass on some of the tracks, I worked with them. And then when our drummer back in Austin developed neurological disorder and was not able to drum anymore, and we needed an official drummer, and so we hired Dale, and that's been a few years ago. And then Jim Hempel and Kevin Mall are in my band's called The Amazing Spooklights, because I wrote a song about the spooklights at Marfa, you know, the mystery lights. Three of those guys are my bandmates, and then the other guys are everybody else's LA session dudes. And man, them guys can play.
So tell me about what prompted the change of scenery from your longtime home of Texas to New England. I know earlier you mentioned that it's just too darn hot down this way, but surely it wasn't just the weather that prompted you to move to New England.
Man, I love the Southwest and still like to visit every chance I get. But I don't know. I just wanted to change the scenery. And I had been up here to New England quite a bit when I was touring. And I had made a lot of friends. I just wanted to change it. And me and my wife talked it over, and she was like, where do you want to go? And I said, well, if it were 15 years ago and I was single, I would go to Los Angeles, but I'm not. And she went to law school in L.A., and she just said, I'm not moving back to L.A. And I said, right, and I know that. and then she said, well, how about the Pacific Northwest? And I said, you know, I've been there. I went out and recorded some tracks there with Ken Stringfellow, who is a member of the sort of alt-punk band, the Posies.
Oh, yeah.
And I did some studio work up there with him and was up there a few days. And I was like, man, you know, I love going to the Pacific Northwest for the weekend, but I don't want to stay long, man. And and I had been up here to New England. And, man, the seasons, you get big, dramatic seasonal changes. It's like, just, man, it's beautiful. And I live in a small town. I bet you I don't put 300 miles a year on my car anymore because I walk everywhere.
I definitely get it. And I think that's really, for a lot of people, kind of a dream to be able to visit, if not live, in New England after going through these sweltering summers. And that does sound like a really interesting change of pace. Your cowboy boots and the little accent that you have kind of draw some attention from the New Englanders. I know people kind of revere Texas.
It's been lovely. And I can, I tell you what, I could go to just about any place here in town and I could just set my boots up on a table or my guitar. And somebody goes, oh, Billy's here.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm the only person up here that consistently wears cowboy boots.
Okay.
And I did a little bit of a change of pace. I still love playing in a band, and I still love making records, and I don't imagine that will ever change. But after I was about 55, I pretty much quit touring after I moved up here. I still do some road days, but like I don't get in the van and go out 2 or 3 weeks anymore. After I was 55, I was like, man, you know what? It's getting hard on me. And I had never been to college, and so I started taking classes online during COVID. I'll be done with my master's degree in about 3 weeks.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and it was funny because I never thought of myself as college material. I'm not convinced my father didn't bribe a high school principal so I could graduate. It wouldn't surprise me to find out that happened. I was a terrible student. Everything's kind of slowed down, and I'm good with that.
Well, do you get to make your way back down to Texas very often?
I hadn't been there in over a year, but, yeah, the first year I was here, I went back and played a couple. I tried to go back and play a couple of gigs in or around Austin. I was doing that every year. And then the venue that I had played at the most in Austin, well, they recently closed. The owner passed away.
Okay.
And they got to the end of their lease, and they said, yeah, we don't want to press on anymore. So that venue is gone. I try to get down every 18 months or so. You know, I can't get good Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
And that is problematic.
It is. That is definitely a common complaint that I hear about people that move away. So I that pains me to hear that you can't enjoy that. But hey, you can't have it all, I guess, right? Well, Billy, I know that you've devoted quite a bit to fundraising for special needs groups. And I think that's something near and dear to your family. Could you touch on that?
Yeah, it is. I have a blended family. Me and my wife, Pamela, the lovely Pamela, we've been married 22 years. And she had two kids, and I had two kids. And for those out there that are math challenged, that's four kids. and three of our four have neurological issues. The oldest, her son, is 32. He's got cerebral palsy. He's nonverbal. He's in a wheelchair. I have twins. Both of them are on the autism spectrum. We do a lot of awareness, a lot of fundraising. And it's not always music. I was in a dance contest, which is funny because I can't dance at all. But it wasn't a real contest. It was just a show where it was set up like Dancing with the Stars. And we raised money for one of the local organizations for adults with special needs. And, you know, almost anytime you see or hear anything, people with special needs or disabilities, they show you the kids, you know. Here's
right.
A 5-year-old and here's a 6-year-old. But, man, those kids get up and they age out. They age out of public school. They don't stop having disabilities, and they don't evaporate. I mean, you have to have things for them. And so I still donate a lot of my time to organizations that provide that.
And I meant to ask you earlier what it was that you were studying for college, by the way.
I'm a therapist.
Okay. Wow. I mean,
I've just recently in the last 6 weeks launched practice, and I have a half dozen clients, and it's not much different than songwriting and being a band leader. I just, you know, people tell me the issues they have, and we talk through it, and you know, I try to offer up, you know, different perceptions and perspectives. And because really, almost everything in your life is about your perception of it. You don't have to change very much to put it in a whole different light.
Congratulations on all of that, and it's just a fascinating the twists and turns that your life has taken are really interesting to hear about. We're talking with Billy Eli here on 88.9 KETR, and while I've got you with me, I was hoping that you could tell me some of the things that you enjoy about public radio.
The main thing that I like about public radio is it's listener supported and it's community responsive. A lot of your bigger, you know, commercial stations, and really even medium and small ones, they're not always responsible and responsive to the communities that they serve. They used to be 40 years ago. First of all, it affects the music. You're not going to hear, you know, you're not going to hear a lot of indie artists or at all on for-profit commercial stuff. It's going to be public radio or student radio. I wouldn't be having a career were it not for public radio and college funded radio, because yeah, we don't have the horses to buy our way, you know, into a big syndicated thing, or but you've got to have enough money to get in the game.
Right. One of the many reasons that I strive to do what I do and be able to talk in depth with people like you, because it's such a rarity these days and really difficult for people in the industry to get.
You know, there's so much of that. There's so much of that great Texas music scene now that it depends on public radio. And, you know, what I always liked about Texas musicians and songwriters and the audiences and the scenes there and all that stuff, I liked that it was always so different, man. There was great blues. There was great Zydeco. There was great, you know, Tex-Mex. There was great country. And then there was that cool stuff like red dirt, you know, which was kind of different. There was good folk. There was good honky-tonk, singer, songwriter, whatever you wanted, man. It was there somewhere. And the great thing about public radio, you don't have to station shop to hear all that. You know, you can have, okay, this is the station I listen to, and they're going to play some of all of that.
You're describing Notably Texan in a nutshell right now, so I appreciate your comments about that. And people can keep up with what you are doing and maybe any gigs that you have coming. You're online, I believe, right?
Yeah, and I'm, you know, just like everybody else, I have all the stock social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, I think it's called now, and Threads, and I have a website. Yeah, same thing everybody. Man, the amount of stuff you have to keep up with.
Yeah.
You know, they came up with all that to make it easier, and it's so easier now that I almost need to hire a full-time helper.
That is the sad truth, isn't it?
It kind of is. The easier it got, well, the more of it I had to do.
Right. So, I mean, maybe the best way for somebody to kind of centrally find all that would just be on your website. Tell us what that is.
BillyEli.net.
And that's spelled E-L-I for anybody who's not familiar.
Yeah, and people ask me, are you any kin to Joe Ely? And I always tell them, I'm not related to anybody that was able to help me out at all. I mean, it's not even spelled the same. I had a guy argue with me one time for an hour and a half, and he kept insisting that I was Joe Ely, and I kept telling him I am not Joe Ely. I saw you at some Coliseum, like in Lafayette, Louisiana. I was like, never played Lafayette. Never played any kind of Coliseum. You know, no, you did. I was like, you know what? Yeah, that was me.
You should have signed an autograph for him at that point, you know, really.
Just if it's that important to you, then yeah.
That's hilarious, man. It has really been a joy speaking with you on Notably Tex and Billy. You're a blast to talk to, and I do hope that we get a chance maybe sometime when you're back down Texas way and find yourself in Northeast Texas, maybe we can have you stop by our studios.
That'd be great, man. I'd love it. I already know where Commerce is.
And that puts you ahead of most people, honestly. So,
thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks again for being with me today, Billy.
You're welcome, man. Thanks, Matt.
If you'd like to find out more about him, he's at BillyEli.net. Just to be clear, that is BillyEli, BillyEli.net. And thank you for listening. I'm Notably Texan host Matt Menke. You can find us at KETR.org.